The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation for Rock and Roll Friday, the great big Labor Day weekend show. Now here's one for the books. We realize that for the first time since 1945, joblessness is at an all-time low. That's what you get when you elect a community organizer as president. But here's one for the books. Here are people who have not lost their job who should. The government under Obama is suing a trucking company. Why? They fired an alcoholic driver. Now, all we hear every day is you shouldn't drive when you're drunk, which you know is true. Don't drive drunk, right? So they took the keys away from an alcoholic driver, and the Obama administration is suing the trucking company, saying that they violated the Americans with Disabilities Act. I'm not making this up. This is something that you cannot believe this. The lawsuit is against the Old Dominion Freight Line Truck Company based in North Carolina. You hear this? Can you believe a thing like this? And he's an alcoholic now. So they said, okay, you can't drive. We're taking away your keys. The EEOC said, oh, no, you can't do that because you're violating the ADA. And here is what the government has said to the trucking company. We're suing you for monetary relief in the form of reinstatement to a driving position. That's for the drunk driver. Back pay, compensatory and punitive damages, compensation for lost benefits for two drivers, and an injunction against future discrimination. And that's because the Obama ADA mandates that persons with disabilities, and by the way, being a drunk is a disability, have an equal opportunity to achieve in the workplace. So the EEOC's director, Catherine Kores, K-O-R-E-S, director of the EEOC's Memphis District Office, says while the EEOC agrees that an employer's concern regarding safety on our highways is a legitimate issue, an employer can both ensure safety and comply with the ADA. So I guess that means that the Obama administration would like them to hire a half-drunk. And I mean, there's a compromise for you, right? In other words, if he's a full drunk, we don't want him on the road, the Obama administration would say. But if he's a half drunk, give him the keys back. They're arguing that they violated the EEOC's rules on the ADA. Old Dominion Freight Line Company is being sued by the Obama administration for firing a drunk. Following U.S. Department of Transportation regulation, the company suspended this employee from his driving position. Now, listen to this. In other words, the U.S. Department of Transportation requires them to fire someone who is a drunk. But the EEOC requires them to hire someone who's a drunk. How's that for government red tape? Now you understand why the business climate in America is where it's at. When you have a group of eggheads running the country who are at odds with reality, you have what you have now, which is a nightmare. And here it is. An article now says that they should hire him. And unfortunately for the Old Dominion Freight Line, other trunking companies and, did I say trunking companies? And everyone who finds themselves driving in the shadow of an 18-wheeler with a drunk driver will now worry about it, right? I mean, do you want to know that a guy driving an 18-wheeler is a drunk or an alcoholic? I've said this for years. I know this goes against all of the rules because the reason that they've declared drug addiction is so that they can make it a billable event for Medicare, Medicaid, and the environment. And you remember the treatment racket is as big as the drug racket itself. The treatment industry is probably as big, if not bigger, than the illegal drug industry. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's, an overlap from one to the other. But the fact of the matter is, I know alcoholics who gave up on their own. They said, I don't want to be a drunk anymore. So you say, oh, it's... But aside from that, now look at the insanity here. The Old Dominion Freight Line is being sued by Obama's EEOC because they fired a drunk driver. That's why the U.S. Department of Transportation regulations require that they fire a drunk driver. You understand how this works? All right, now you understand how this works. It gets crazier. By the day, it gets crazier by the day. Now you understand why America is crippled under this egghead administration. Your industry could be the next one targeted by these eggheads in the Democrat administration. You might be the next one to catch the mealy eyes of a bloated bureaucrat who will say, common sense be damned. We don't care about common sense. Common sense doesn't matter. Every employee you hire could be a ticking time bomb of unpredictable liabilities because of exploding Obamacare costs to incendiary decrees from these lunatics at the EEOC. I have said to you before the EEOC should be eliminated in this country. Everybody wants equal employment opportunity, but nobody wants insanity in an environment like this. If the EEOC prevails in this insane case, it will mean that Old Dominion will still be liable both for any damage to life or property that results from a potential relapse by one of its recovering alcoholic drivers. And by the way, these new burdens will raise Old Dominion's cost of doing business. So I'm trying to explain to you why there are no new jobs in America. This is a microcosm of what's wrong with the egghead administration that we have right now, which is that one arm of the octopus says, go ahead and fire people who are alcoholic drivers. The other arm of the Obama octopus says, we're going to sue you if you fire him because you're violating his ADA rights. Nobody can function in an environment like this. Here's another story that I thought you would be interested in today. It's supposed to be a weekend, you know, a throwaway day. But the fact of the matter is I can't. Feds say to drunk drivers, keep on trucking. Maybe they will give them a bottle, a new 190-proof Obama whiskey. Maybe the EEOC can put out a bottle of booze with Obama's picture on it or Big Sis on it and say, keep on trucking. That would be something. Maybe the EEOC can provide drunk truck drivers, with a bottle and say, keep on trucking, and you have a disease, boo-hoo. That's the kind of world you're living in today. There's another story that I found that I put up on michaelsavage.com that you're not going to believe, but it's real. It's real. A coloring book has come out about 9/11, and Muslim pressure groups are upset with the coloring book. Why? Because they show the terrorists to be what they were, Muslims, and they show the victims to be Americans. And I'm not making this up. Clayton, Missouri, publisher calls FBI over Muslim backlash from 9/11 coloring book. Taking heat from Muslim groups upset with a coloring book about the 9/11 attacks, a publisher says he's been in contact with the FBI to protect him. Wayne Bell, a publisher of Really Big Coloring Books, Inc., says there's been a negative backlash against the book by Muslim pressure groups who want him to burn the book, basically. And he said there are people from Al Jazeera that have called, people from Iranian TV, people from Palestinian Hamas TV. He said a lot of people from Islamic communities have called in here and said negative things prior to the book being made and then after we made the book, too, about the book itself. See, isn't this wonderful? Isn't diversity grand that you bring Muslims into the country and now they want to tell you what books you can publish and what books you can't publish? Now, what is in the book that's negative? You decide whether it's a negative book or not. The coloring book is called We Shall Never Forget 9/11, the Kids' Book of Freedom. And what's in it? Well, the book features images of Osama bin Laden and Islamic terrorists. Do you think Muslim groups don't want that? I don't know. It also shows American citizens upset by the attacks, including a woman with a cross around her neck. Oh, my God. She has a cross. Well, there, that does it. You know why? The coloring book shows no Muslim Americans mourning the attacks. Naturally, the pressure group that I was once in a lawsuit with, the Council on So-Called American-Islamic Relations, has criticized the coloring book as one-sided. The publisher was asked to explain the absence of patriotic Muslim Americans in the book who are also opposed to the attacks. And here is what the publisher said. He said, well, I don't know. I mean, this is what our research showed us. Every time we mention one of the hijackers, we call them what they are, and that's what parents wanted, radical Islamic Muslim extremists. And every time we mention one of the hijackers, like the three guys that drove the plane into the Pentagon, there's nothing else you can call them. I mean, what do you think? They're having a bad hair day? The book has been selling very briskly. And, of course, that's making some Muslims very unhappy that people see somebody with a headscarf, a mask, a gun, and a book in their hand with bombs going off. And a woman crying is wearing a cross. Isn't America great? Isn't it a great country? Well, God bless these people for publishing the book. God bless them. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation to take your calls.
Savage.
Here's further proof of the madness of the egghead administration under Barack Hussein Obama, okay? Drunk drivers. Are you listening to this? Do you want a drunk driver on the road? Of course you don't. Do you want a drunk driver behind an 18-wheeler? You'd be crazy if you said yes. You want somebody driving an 18-wheeler who has a problem with alcohol? Of course not. So, the Department of Transportation requires trucking companies to suspend employees from their driving positions if they are alcoholics. Makes sense, right? Not if you're Obama. Because Obama's other Hydra arm, his other tentacle, is suing the trucking company. The EEOC, which, by the way, should be taken apart and disbanded. The EEOC is suing the trucking company because they're violating the man's ADA rights. They say that alcoholism is a disability and that discrimination violates this federal law. And the vermin at the EEOC say that we're suing them for monetary relief in form of reinstatement to a driving position. Remember, they didn't throw him out. They kept him on in a non-driving position. But the drunk bum wants his keys back. You hear this? And the EEOC says, yes, the drunk bum has a right to drive the truck. So they want to reinstate him to a driving position. Obama's EEOC wants back pay, compensatory and punitive damages, compensation for lost benefits for two drivers, and an injunction against future discrimination against drunk drivers. The vermin who runs, I mean the genius who runs the EEOC in the Memphis District Office says, while the EEOC agrees that employers' concern regarding safety on our highways is a legitimate issue, an employer can both ensure safety and comply with the ADA. So as I say, what do they want to do, hire a half-drunk? Listen, this is getting out of control. This is an example of eggheads running the country into the ground. That is why we have no jobs. That is why the Islamic terrorists are basically salivating over the situation that they see over here, the weakness. All of our enemies are circling us like jackals. China is invading us with cyber security invasions. I haven't gotten to that story yet. But I have another allegation. I mean, I allege that a new form of, it's a politically correct, sorry to use the phrase, analysis of being a drunk. Alcoholism, I would say, certainly has a chemical component. I mean, I'm a trained individual in the field of health and nutrition. I understand that certain people have a weakness for alcohol and they can't control themselves. But that's, if you realize you have a weakness towards alcohol or genetic predisposition of being a drunk, you don't drink. That's all. You say, it's not for me, it's poison. Every time you see a bottle, it has a skull and crossbones on it. You don't say, oh, I'm a weak person. I get a government massage. Then I want to get a government trip to Hawaii to a rehab in bed. Oh, this already. What kind of country is this? You know, everyone has a weakness of some. Look at Oscar De La Hoya, that story. Now he's coming out, and he's saying that it was him in the garter belt stockings in the brassiere. Even though he had a gold digger, $20 million allegedly, who blackmailed him. She got pictures of him during a drunken orgy where he was wearing panties and brassiere and high heels. And then he first said it was Photoshop. Now it turns out that he paid her $20 million. Well, my answer would have been De La Hoya should have said right up front, yes, it's me, and I'll bet you what, I can still kick you behind in high heels. Anyone who thinks I'm not a man, I'll tell you what, I'll take you on in the ring wearing high heels and a brassiere. How's that? I'll meet you in Madison Square Garden any day you name, and I'll wear high heels, a brassiere, and panties, and a wig. And that it was me, and that's the end of it. No. So first he says it wasn't me. Now he's saying he's coming clean. Yeah, I'm a drunk, he says. Then he says I'm a use drugs. Now I did wear the panties and the brassiere. Guess what? He's making a huge mistake. I'm going to make a prediction that Oscar De La Hoya coming out like this with this public confession will be a disaster for the rest of his life. This is an example of what's wrong with all of these treatment programs, whether it be AA or Narcan or whatever they, ever they call them. There's a whole trend to telling you to tell everybody all your inner secrets and go around admitting to everybody with big sobby eyes, I'm a drunk and I'm a this and I'm a that and I'm sorry. You know, that's a bunch of garbage. Certain things you keep to yourself. Sure, get treatment. But don't run around telling everybody you're this or you're that. My feeling is that these public confessions, which are an offshoot of these AA meetings and Narcan and Narc Anonymous, whatever they call them, Sex Anonymous, keep it to yourself. Nobody wants to know all of your inner secrets, and my position is quite clear. When you start making public confessions like this, because these stupid therapists encourage you to do it, you know, let it all hang out, be honest with the world, you're going to regret it. De La Hoya never should have done this. Never. Listen to here in clip 24 now.
My life was a big mess. Rock bottom was recently, within a couple of years, just thinking, you know, is my life even worth it? I don't have the strength. I don't have the courage to take my own life.
Okay, see, I happen to like Oscar De La Hoya as a boxer. I always admired him. I thought he was an amazing man who rose from basic poverty, became a world-class boxer, built a wonderful company of his own. So he had problems. So he had alcohol and drug and other issues. So what? Everyone has issues. Now, what's this with now hanging his heart out for everybody to rip him apart for? Who talked him into this? This is all part of the AA mistake, in my opinion. What do you think? I'll be right back.
Savage.
When you're in the state of that high of drinking and doing drugs, and emotions run through your head like there's no tomorrow. I can't even recall what runs through my head because I'm sober now. All these emotions just run through your head, and you do stupid, crazy things.
That's Oscar De La Hoya. I have to repeat, I was always a big fan of his. I thought he was amazing. You know, top-class boxer, world-class boxer, businessman, rose from relative obscurity. So he was an alcoholic. He hit rock bottom. Then he appeared, remember in pictures, someone blackmailed him, some Russian he was with. And allegedly, he settled for $20 million to get the pictures back. Now he's admitting it was him in the garter belt and stockings and in the brassiere. All right, you can laugh at it all you want, but the fact of the matter is he should have said when it came out, he'll cop to it. Yeah, I was drunk and stoned, and I put on garter belt and stockings and a brassiere, and I can still kick you behind. And I challenge anyone who wants to put me down, I'll put on high heels and a brassiere, and I'll fight you in the ring. That would have been the right answer. So first it's no, now he's gone to AA, and they're telling him, oh, yeah, let it all hang out. Go to everyone you've ever heard and tell them what you did. Let's go out there and tell everybody, you know, turn yourself inside out for the world. It's not going to work. It's a theory that they have. It is not a proven method for curing people of a weakness or a sickness or of whatever you want to call it. It's a theory. And like many other theories, until we have proof positive, I'd be very leery about going with the public confession on issues like this. And let's talk about alcoholism itself. Alcoholism has a very high relapse rate. There's evidence that approximately 90% of alcoholics over the four-year period following so-called treatment. And no controlled studies definitively have shown any single or combined intervention which prevents relapse in a fairly predictable manner. So relapse is a central issue of alcoholism treatment, warrants further study. In other words, the other ones in the alcohol research area, they need to keep their jobs, so they need further research. That's the way that works. They can never prove anything. They need more federal money to study more drunks, preferably in strip clubs in Thailand. They need a federal grant to go to Thailand to study drunks in Thailand so they can come back and do a cross-cultural analysis of alcoholism. And then maybe they can go to Spain and do another study. Okay, that's the story. What do you want to talk about? Alcoholism, De La Hoya, drunk. You heard the story I led with today, didn't you? Government sues trucking company for firing an alcoholic driver. White House hints at more job speeches ahead. What's a job speech going to do? What in the world do they want from Obama? He cannot create jobs unless they're government jobs. How do you create a government job? By another stimulus. How do you create another stimulus? By taxing more people. You tax more people, you kill the economy. So in other words, when you say jobs, what can he do to create jobs? Well, he actually knows what he can do. And I'm surprised to tell you, he knows exactly what liberalism is. For example, on this the controversial EPA smog proposal that was about to go into effect, it probably would have cost $1 billion in lost revenue and killed jobs across America with rolling blackouts. So even Obama understood that he couldn't do the EPA smog proposal right now, and he canceled it. That was a smart thing to do. He did the right thing. So if he, as a diehard so-called progressive liberal, understands that regulation is killing business, then he ought to go to the next step. Untangle the red tape. Dismember the EEOC. Rein in the EPA. Rein in all of these government agencies. Cut business taxes, and then you'll see the economy boom. I know business people with very, very successful businesses that will not expand because of the business climate in this country. They will not expand their product lines. They will not open up new factories. They will not go out and take loans. The banks are frozen right now. That's the reality of what's going on. So Obama knows this. I mean, a fool he isn't. You know, 1-800-449. You know, it's Friday here already. Give me another piece of rock and roll. I think we're on a good roll here. So that's why I need some rock and roll, because I didn't have lunch today. All I had was a knish.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame?
It is Labor Day weekend. Give yourself a break. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better under Obama. Things are going to get a lot worse in the Middle East before they get better. Things are going to get a lot worse in your personal life before they get better. Just take it from Uncle Mike. Don't look for a happy tomorrow, because it's very unlikely it's just around the corner. No, happiness is not just around the corner. I would say more misery is just around the corner. Believe me. So get used to it. You're a tough person. The human being is a very tough organism, by the way. I don't know, this whole thing about us being weak and everyone crying and opening themselves up and this and that. Come on, for God's sakes. Human beings are tough as you can believe. You know, I always used to be amazed as a kid. As I said, I grew up on the tabloid papers of New York City, which made me a great talk show host. And one of the, you know, I remember this day, the Daily News, when I was a little boy, showed arrows of a boy who fell out of the fourth story of a tenement and bounced off an awning and then hit the ground and nothing happened to him. And they had the arrows in those days. Boy falls out a fourth story window and lives. So naturally, you're 9 years old, you look at it, say, what's this? And they show the arrow, dot, 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 hits awning and then bounces on the sidewalk. The kid dusts himself off and he gets up and walks away. So, you know, you realize how tough people can be. We're not these weaklings that the government and the rehab racket want you to think we are. Oh, I'm a drug. You go to GA, AA, DA, LSMFT. Everyone's going to a meeting. It's a social group. What are you holding hands for with another sob sister? They're not going to help you. Usually, if you go to an Al-Anon, scoring drugs, which is in the Bay Area, of course, have been hollowed out. There's no one going to church. And what they are, they're not, there's no cross in there anymore. They take the cross out. They have, Tuesday nights, you see the drunks standing outside smoking cigarettes, and they go in and then they eat sugary donuts and coffee. I mean, how many of them really get better? You know, all right, you got the picture. Government sues trucking company for firing alcoholic driver. I don't care if you're a Democrat or Republican. I don't care if you're this or that. What sense does it make for one arm of the government to tell you have to fire a drunk driver if you're a trucking company, and the other arm coming saying we're suing you for compensatory damage and everything else because you fired a drunk driver who is basically a disabled person? You know, and I take double offense at it. I'll tell you why. I had a brother who was really disabled. He was so disabled that he went to a state home and he died in it. It was a heartbreak for all of us. So don't tell me you're about him anymore. I know what real disability is. And most of these illnesses, excuse me, most of these choices, I believe drug use is a choice. I believe alcohol use is a choice. I believe sexual activity is a choice. And if you don't like it, stop doing it. Otherwise, stop complaining about it. That's all. That's how I look at it. It's one man's opinion. Chester in New York City on WOR. Go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, Uncle Michael, I'm an alcoholic.
Yes.
I've been sober for going on 23 years.
God bless you.
Alcoholics Anonymous. It's supposed
yeah.
to be anonymous. You're not supposed to announce this to everybody.
All right. I mean? Okay, so why is De La Hoya going out saying to the whole world what he's telling them in Anonymous?
Probably somebody's making money off of it. I mean, because AA is free. And it works to me because these people holding hands are praying to God together as one. And as when you get two or more to pray, the more you get to pray together.
Let me ask you, Chester, do they actually pray to God in an AA meeting? Are they allowed to do that?
Oh, yes, we are, and we do.
Shocking. You better keep it to yourself. The EEOC is liable to say you're discriminating against Muslims or Buddhists or somebody.
Yeah, other people do show up. Other people show up once in a while. But we say.
So, but you're saying the community of ex-alcoholics keeps you strong, is that it?
Well, it's hearing other people's problems.
In other words, misery loves company. I get it. All right, you know, I was raised the old tough way, which is shut your mouth and keep it to yourself. My father said, dummy up, shut up. If it bothers you, it's too bad. Don't tell anyone about it. That's all. Live with it. And if you're suffering, suffer. That's human life. And just get walking and take a job and do something with yourself. Don't give me that crap that you can't do this and you can't do that. And that's how I was raised. Okay, so I realize it's another age. I realize times have changed. That's the way it was. I mean, if you're raised hard, you're raised hard. But what's with everybody with a sob sister? Everyone needs to hold someone's hand. Admittedly, it'd be nice to have 1,000 people praying, oh, yeah, God spare me from the bottle. How about just not drinking tomorrow? That doesn't work? I know somebody who was a drinker, and he had a drinking problem that was very bad. I don't mean in the gutter, but it was bad. Okay? One day he woke up. And he said, for my children, I'm never going to drink again. It's been 11 years. Never went to an AA meeting. I think he went once and didn't like it. It wasn't for him. Willpower, willpower, willpower. Whatever happened to willpower in this country? Where is willpower? I'd like to know where Dr. Willpower has gone in this country. I don't need big brother. I don't need big sister. I need willpower. That's all. That's the whole story in a nutshell. Now, I realize, by the way, not everybody's as strong as I am. And I have my weaknesses. I have my frailties. I have my problems. There are many a night that I don't feel good. There's many a night I don't feel good about living. I don't feel good about my life. I don't feel good about the world. I don't feel good about the government. I don't go to a meeting. I play with my dog and watch television. Or I take a bicycle ride. Okay, I do the simple things. And then I've learned, I tell you the truth, you know that I'm a spiritual guy. I am not religious, to be honest with you. I've never felt comfortable in a house of worship in my life. I've tried them all. I have. I've tried almost every walk, almost every religion. I've been in various. I like the houses of worship. I think they're beautiful, and I admire people who can go to those things. I am not a group person. I don't know what it is. Maybe I'm too headstrong. Maybe I'm too individualistic. Maybe I'm too egotistical. But truthfully, I never felt comfortable in a house of worship. I admire those who do. Let me be clear about it. It's just not for me. So what do? Sometimes I do nothing. Sometimes I just suffer with my problems. Other times I pray, but it really doesn't work because for a rationalist, what you want are results, right? You want to go, hey, great guy in the sky, mumbo jumbo, come down and help me. Well, he ain't coming down, man. He's not going to pop down in the living room. You're not Jimmy Carter. Only Jimmy Carter saw Jesus in a white sheet in his living room from shaking the snake and drinking the strychnine. But you're not going to see him. Okay? So the fact is you got to learn how to live with the silence of God and just assume he's there. For some reason, it's been thousands of years, we've been waiting for him to come, whatever, and where is he? No one knows. You have to believe in this invisible, unknown, whatever. And, okay, so you say, I can't believe in this stuff because there's no proof, and I'm a rationalist, and I found in my life, unless there's hard proof for something, I'm sorry, I can't believe in this invisible God business. So I would tell you to think the way my mother told me when I was a young kid and said the same thing, when I was a true skeptic and a true cynic, rather. She said to me, if you don't believe in God, what do you believe in? And the answer is, well, I believe in nothing. So she would say to me, well, then you believe in something. I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, you believe in nothing. That's believing in something. What do you mean? She said, well, she said, you believe in nothing, so you believe in nothing. That's your belief system. So in other words, you're a nihilist if you believe in nothing, but you do believe in something. So it shows you do believe in something. Because nobody, well, let's put it another way. Jesus said man cannot live by bread alone. Let me boil it down for you. That was pretty well put. How many meals have you had in fancy restaurants and you walked away empty in your heart? Every one of them? Oh, I had tiramisu and I had this and I had that and I had the salmon and this and the salmon. And I went to the this restaurant and that restaurant and the waiter got cacao and this. And big deal. And well, how'd you feel after the meal? As empty as you felt on the way in. But you didn't let anyone know that. Maybe if you're a woman, you wore the $12,000 shoes and the $250,000 earring, whatever it costs. And you thought everybody thought you were a queen and you looked like a queen. But inside your heart, you were empty. And the meal didn't fill you up. Why? Because man cannot live by bread alone. So it brings us back to the fact that we are spiritual creatures. That, not okay, what you want to say, we are spiritual creatures. And it doesn't matter what your creed is, what your religion is, you're a spiritual creature. And you do have to find that touchstone, whatever it may be. Now, I realize this is now bordering on the religious, but it is Friday. And I told you, Fridays used to be given over in the Savage Nation to philosophy and to religion, remember? So I did go from this alcoholism and the De La Hoya scene into this discussion of religion in a way, because we're moving into a weekend when Jewish people go to temple, or at least they used to, some do. Christian people go to the church. Muslim people tonight are in their prayers tonight. So it is a time on the weekends, weekend. It wasn't really set up as a time for golf. It took you out of the factory so you could go to worship God, because man cannot live by bread alone. I'll be right back. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. You know, we have a very special guest right now. I'm on WOR in New York, as you probably know, and many other great stations across the country. But beginning next week, my new lead-in host on WOR is former New York Governor David Patterson. Now, although he and I probably disagree on most political things, it's very interesting to me that he's chosen a career in radio. And I'm very happy to introduce Mr. Patterson to the Savage Nation audience. David or Governor Patterson, whichever you prefer, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Good evening, Michael. You know, I was sitting here listening to the program, and I was thinking that the difference between religion and spirituality, as I see it, is that religion really reflects the institutions. So yes. Religions and institutions change. So, for instance, if you have two wives in the United States, you're a bigamist, and they put you in, right. In jail. If you have two wives in Egypt, you might be considered an underachiever. But spirituality is your relationship with the spirit, with God. And that's why probably, because you are so individualistic, that's probably why you've never enjoyed, and I never really have much enjoyed my time in the institutional religion.
You mean we share a certain disdain for organized religion? Can we say that we agree on that?
Yeah, I think
David, look, I tell you the truth. I'm an ex-New Yorker, and, you know, there's no such thing as an ex-New Yorker in many ways. When I was a little kid, I remember your dad, Basil Patterson, a former New York State Senator, Secretary of State, Deputy Mayor. I don't know. I didn't understand politics as a kid, but I knew he was a very classy man. I liked him, you know, stylistically. And I really did. I thought he was a wonderful persona. There's something I need to get out in the open, David, which is this. I don't know if the audience knows this, but you are legally blind, and yet you finished a law degree while legally blind at Hofstra University, which to me is an amazing achievement. And I would say congratulations for having the drive to overcome such an impediment. Here's the question, though. Being visually impaired as you are, or legally blind, do you think this makes you a better listener? And does it give you a better ear for radio than most others?
Well, I think it forces you to focus. It's not that your other senses are better. It's just that you focus on them more. And I do think that growing up, and I was never taught Braille, which I think was a mistake. I had very little access to information, so I found the radio to be an interesting format. And I found that I learned from people, even with whom I didn't always agree. Bob Grant was on in New York, and I didn't agree with him all the time, but he was one of the funniest people I ever heard on the radio. I mean, I would roll on the floor. I thought he was so funny. And
So you did listen to talk radio then as a youngster?
Oh, all the time. I sort of fashioned myself as a. I used to, use those old tape machines and act as the caller and the host, and sound with voice.
Well, I think that's amazing. No, that's truly amazing. I mean, you're a progressive liberal. I'm an independent conservative, for want of a better description. I would define myself in another way. And here it is. You're on WOR starting next week. You're going to be my lead-in on WOR. And the fact is that I bet you that we find that we share certain ideas in common.
One thing that happened to me that was almost an epiphany is I've had pretty, progressive liberal points of view. And then one day I got this phone call, and they basically told me in an hour, you're going to become governor. And then when you are the one who makes the final decision, when you have to be the adult in the room, it's amazing how your point of view can change.
Hold on. This is very interesting. It worked for you. The question is, will it work for President Obama? Will he have that epiphany? We'll be right back here on the Savage Nation with David Pattison, former governor of New York.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. It's normally Rock and Roll Friday, September 2nd, big Labor Day weekend, and most people are either traveling or they're there already and they don't want to focus on many things that are serious, but there's an awful lot of serious stuff out there, and I think it's worth talking about, especially if you're blessed with the airtime that I have. And we've been talking about some of the crazy things out there. For example, a trucking company fired a truck driver who was an alcoholic. They didn't fire him from the company. They stopped him from driving. They gave him another job. That's U.S. Department of Transportation regulations. You have to suspend somebody who's an alcoholic. Okay, so they did it. Now another arm of the government is suing the trucking company, saying that they violated the ADA, and they want to sue the trucking company. They want him to have a driving position, even though he's a drunk, back pay, punitive damages, compensation for lost benefits for two drivers, and an injunction against future discrimination. Now, I have to ask, why should we bend over backwards for a drunk truck driver? The answer is, this is crazy. Joining us right now is my new lead-in host on WOR beginning next week in New York, the former governor of New York State, David Pattison, who, as I said in the last hour, no doubt politically we're on the opposite side of most things. I mean, he's obviously a progressive liberal. I am obviously not a progressive liberal on almost everything. In fact, on everything. And David joins us again on the Savage Nation. David, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, Michael, the other thing about the trucking company is, what about the public safety issue of having people who are in diminished capacity driving a truck, which can wreak all kinds of damage and death
Listen to what the EEOC said. Here's Catherine Corris, director of the EEOC in Memphis. She said this: while the EEOC agrees that an employer's concern regarding safety in our highways is a legitimate issue, an employer can both ensure safety and comply with the ADA. And my answer was, how? By hiring a half drunk? This is crazy. And I'm sure you know, at the end of the last hour, you said, yes, you're a progressive liberal, but once you were given the keys to the state, you had it become something different. I'd like you to continue with that thought because it was an amazing statement.
Well, I had started to sense it a couple months before when we were putting out our budget. I thought we were overspending. Then all of a sudden, I'm the one in charge of the budget. So the first thing I did was cut about $1 billion internally to kind of set an example for the legislature. As the months went on, I'm getting the indications, and we're talking about March, April, May, and June of 2008, I'm getting the indication that we are going to see the worst recession since the Great Depression. So I talked to my staff, and I said, I'd like to ask for airtime from the networks and to go on and say that this is what's going to happen, and we're going to have to cut back right now, even though it's the summer, even though it's an election year. These are times you're not supposed to bother the legislature. I'm going to bring them back to Albany, and we need to cut $2 billion.
Right.
Now, a woman called me up and said, who are you to think that you can go on TV and radio like you're the president? That was my mother that placed that call. And I did go on, and I did say this, and I was totally pilloried. I was called an alarmist, an incompetent, he wasn't elected, this, that, and the other thing. And then within 6 weeks of the time I went on, we know what happened with AIG and Lehman Brothers crashed, and
right.
And Merrill Lynch was subsumed by Bank of America. And the point is that I was treated by many as a traitor. And what I said to them is, I don't know that my basic ideology has changed, but I do know that this state has overspent for years and it's finally caught up with us.
Yep.
And I thought that was the beginning of the end for me because
politically.
It was just not what people wanted to hear, and I got $11 million from the, major unions and the major special
interests
trashing me for trying to cut these programs. And then they put a blind person in a wheelchair on TV. I've never seen a blind person do a commercial unless it was Ray Charles or Stevie Wonder. trashing me for what I'm doing.
That's a low blow. That is a low blow.
That was a low blow, and clearly I've never forgotten it. And it was very interesting because I thought that the ethics of that decision made it a good political decision, but at that particular time there weren't that many people saying it. Nobody, if you tried to say the country is going downhill, you're treated as an alarmist.
So you would say at that point you were a pragmatist rather than a progressive at that point, and you got slammed for it. Well, let me ask you about this. How did you get through law school being impaired, visually impaired, and you didn't learn Braille? How did you read the law books?
Well, you know, it's very difficult because there weren't obviously that many blind people going to law school, and so I had to rely on classmates who would read to me, and there was some, you know, even in the difficult rigor of law school, there were a lot of very generous people who read to me. And then I tried to tape all the classes and listen to them a second time so that I would take advantage of
that. But that's an amazing fact. In other words, you have to listen and memorize without seeing it, which is one dimension missing from seeing and hearing. Or, you know what I'm saying? In other words, you could see a page. You can read the page to yourself. It's a little different than hearing the page read to you in terms of the memory. So you must have a very acute memory, Governor.
And interestingly, even with the little vision I do have, what you see, you remember a whole lot better than what you hear. Sight is an igniting part of memory. Hearing is very difficult to adapt to memorization. And when I became governor, one of the problems I had was that I might speak two or three times a week when I was lieutenant governor. You know, who cares what the lieutenant governor has
right,
to say?
Right.
But when I became governor, I was speaking five and six times a day, and I spent so much time memorizing that, to be honest with you, there were times that I burned myself out. And I think, I made some decisions that, if I really was not as exhausted, I wouldn't have made. But, you know, in the end...
Why did you decide not to run in the primaries and leave politics? What made you leave altogether?
Well, I think I got that I had offended so many people. It was very easy for anyone else who was running to say, get me in. I won't be cutting things like he did and that kind of thing. And so I sort of realized that wasn't...
So in other words, you could have been attacked from the left and obviously from the right. Because you announced on February 26, 2010, that you would not be a candidate in the Democratic primary, and then you went on to WOR Radio. Is this what you're really going to be doing, you think, for a long period of time, or is this a stepping stone back to politics?
No, I think, I never rule things out, but, those people that they've been doing something too long, like boxers?
I hear you.
And even maybe even some people in radio, they've been doing that too long, and they've just outlived their usefulness. I think life is exciting. I think there are all kinds of different challenges, and this is a real challenge for me. There've been a lot of big name people that got talk radio shows who flubbed, and I really want to prove that I can, that I belong in this environment, and so that's why
it's a very difficult thing to do. I'm just talking one man to another. Because it subsumes almost everything else in your life. In order to do it right, you almost have to put everything else away. It's impossible to do this just as a sort of a couple hours a day. It's impossible. And that's the problem with it, because most people are unwilling to give up most of their lives for a talk radio career.
Yeah, I think I've noticed that. And then it's a sacrifice, and it probably has ramifications on the other
it does. I mean, my family is on a vacation right now, and they have been for 10 days, and I'm not. I could have gone, but truthfully, I needed to be on the air. I wanted to be on the air because I think there are so many amazing things happening politically while Congress is out of session that I couldn't afford not to be on the air. But there's an example, and it also becomes all-consuming, David, and I'm sure you know this already. I mean, how many years have you been filling in on OR?
One. Although I've been a guest on, like John Gambling, he's the morning person. I've been a guest on his show for a number of years. And
right.
I guess about a year ago, they said to me, we'd like to see you come in and do the show a couple of times. And I did a couple of times, and I guess you know that the president of the broadcasting company that owns WOR passed away about a month ago. And
terrible, yes. Mr. Buckley, he was a prince. I loved the man. He was a great man.
A tremendous person. He's the one that really talked me into doing this. And I'm just sorry that he won't get to see me make the effort, but I'm excited about the challenge, and I think the ability to, go from one place and take on another challenge is what makes life exciting.
How many hours a day are you going to do the show? Is it two or three?
Two. I'm going to start doing two, and because this is not what my career has been, and I obviously have got a lot to learn, and.
That's a long time. 2 hours is a long time. One last question. Did you grow up, you listened to talk radio, you said you listened to Bob Grant. Other than Michael Savage, who else did you listen to in talk radio?
Larry King was a talk radio person nationally before he got
the
TV show. He was a kind of interesting talk show host. There was a guy from California who was in New York named Alex Bennett, super progressive liberal who I listened to when I was younger. He's pretty funny at the same time. And, I think a lot of the talk people is they've almost melded together, and there are very few who kind of have their own style and really don't try to mimic what they hear in the atmosphere. But that goes in all professions.
That's right. Well, there are very few originals in any field. There's no question about that. And, I wish you the best of luck on radio as my lead-in. As you well know, I'm going to send you a copy of my new novel, Abusive Power, and I hope you can have somebody read it to you because you're going to love this thriller, and maybe you'll have me on your show one of these days when it comes out September 13th.
So many people are listening, particularly because so many people are living longer, that getting things on tape or downloading them through, the companies that do that, it's a lot easier now. But when I was growing up, there weren't that many avenues, and talk radio certainly was one for me.
Well, it's an interesting field, and I think it's future. I'm very bullish on talk radio. I think talk radio is more important today than it ever was because it's one of the last vestiges of independent voices and independent thinking. It's certainly not homogenized, not if you really speak from the bottom of your heart and you have a brain to go with it. And I'm sure that we're going to expect some shocks from David Patterson on WOR. And you're my lead-in, so I'm going to be listening once in a while. Thank you very much for joining us today on the program, and I wish you the best of luck in your career on radio.
I'm sorry your family's away, but have a good weekend otherwise.
In fact, I will. Believe me, I will. The time is, well, it's 19 minutes after the hour. You're listening to The Savage Nation on 300 and some odd stations across America. I'll be right back.
Savage.
She's the girl in the red blue jeans. She's the queen of all the teams. She's the woman that I know. She's the woman that loves me so. Say, bebop-a-loo-la.
Welcome back to The Savage Nation. White House hints at more job speeches ahead. I don't know what speeches are going to do for jobs. I mean, cutting bureaucracy, lowering business taxes. Everyone in business knows that that's what they're waiting for. Government sues trucking company because they fired an alcoholic driver. Government says taking keys away from alcoholic driver was a violation of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. We've been talking about that. And they also said that man cannot live by bread alone. Man is a spiritual being. Those are some of the topics. We've also played sound from Oscar De La Hoya, who is now bearing all, admitting that it was he in high heels and brassiere and stockings after all, even though allegedly he paid the Russian girl $20 million to give him back the pictures. And my answer would have been, okay, you got a picture of him in the garter belt. He should have gotten up and said, I'll tell you what, it is me. But I challenge anyone who thinks that they can beat me. I'll fight you with high heels on and a brassiere and a wig, and I'll still whip your butt. That's what he should have done. So now he's doing it, what, years later? I am asking why AA and drunk this A and that A tells you to go and tell the whole world your problems. As a man said in the last hour, anonymous, anonymous, anonymous. Why is De La Hoya bearing all about his alcoholism, his drug use, his sexual stuff? I don't think this is smart. I think it's going to come back to haunt him and is going to make him very, very unhappy very soon. Somebody's advising him wrongly again. If you care to comment on any of these topics, please do so by calling 1-800-449-8255. Let's begin with Dan in New York on WOR. Dan, go ahead. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to call in to personally thank you. 2 weeks ago, I won a copy of Abuse of Power, and I got it in the mail today.
And how is it? Have you read it yet?
Unfortunately, I haven't. But I also wanted to – I don't want to give anything away. I just want to personally thank you for adding my favorite politician quote of the last 50 years in the novel.
Which?
I'm drawing a blank right now. I can't even think.
Well, you said your favorite political quote. I don't even know which one it is because I don't recall one in the book. You mean as a
Barry Goldwater.
The beginning of the book. The extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
And moderation in the pursuit of justice is no virtue.
You're right, Barry Goldwater. That is a dedication in the book. There's no question about it. That's exactly right. I think America needs more extremism right now, not more moderation. And I think the only way we're going to survive as a nation is to be more extremist. I absolutely believe that in every way. And we can go into that in more detail, but thank you for the call. You reminded me what the dedication is. I've forgotten myself. Look at this story. California mansion deaths were not homicides. A kid is either thrown down a flight of stairs or falls and he dies, not a homicide. Then the mother is found, her hands tied, her legs tied, hanging from a chandelier in the same house naked. And the police in the city of San Diego, they're so brilliant, not a homicide. The guy, he didn't do it. I've never seen anything like this. How could they deem a woman hanging from a chandelier with her hands tied behind her back and with her feet tied, naked from a chandelier, not a homicide? How is that possible? It's impossible. And yet they did in San Diego. Virginia man charged with producing a terrorist video. 24-year-old Virginia resident John Reston accused of helping present. Oh, I guess he was a Muslim. Yes. Jaber Ahmed, a Pakistani native. Don't tell anybody, though.
Savage.
Bon, bon. bong, bong. This is not breaking news. This is the Savage Nation. Now, you know, the Bay Area, I live here in the San Francisco area. I love the place. I love the place. And the people are crazy, as you well know. They attract crazy people who think that their craziness is a mark of distinction. The roads are broken. The bureaucrats are out of control. Now, Oakland, California is going to host the nation's first marijuana street fair. And they're going to get a chance to smoke in the street. And listen to what people are saying. Patients need to take their medicine when they need to, said Kim Q, a Berkeley resident who is chief executive of the International Cannabis and Hemp Expo. She says, being a patient myself, that's something that's mandatory. Wink, wink. Now, I've told you that once you start to medicalize a weakness such as alcoholism or addiction to marijuana, you're going to get losers like this who say, well, I'm sick. I need medical marijuana. And I need a prescription from a quack doctor so I can go around blowing dope in everyone's face and show how cool I am. The fact of the matter is, I, for one, am sick and tired of breathing in marijuana in the streets. I hate it. You know, if a person has a drink, I don't smell alcoholic fumes wafting down the street. But I don't have to tell you how many times I've walked down the streets of San Francisco or Marin County or Oakland and almost threw up from another stinking, filthy pothead blowing dope in the street, and I'm offended by it, and I don't want it. And let me tell you something else. I'm considering getting a group of people together with a class action lawsuit against a city for damaging the health of people through marijuana smoke. How do you like that? You can get a contact high from marijuana smoke. What if you don't want to smoke marijuana? What if you don't want to inhale marijuana? And yet you're forced to because these dummies in the city have said, oh, yeah, it's medical marijuana, and you let these jerks run around smoking in the street, and you have to inhale it. I've smelled it in restaurants, and it makes me sick. Why not sue the restaurant? Why not sue the city? Sue the bus company. Let them understand that it runs two ways, and these left-wing fools who are fooling nobody with their medical marijuana lie are going to find out one day that they're going to be hitting the pocketbook the same way they got where they are today. And let me tell you something else. This all started in 2006 when George Soros funded the Medical Marijuana Initiative in California and the Medical Marijuana Initiative in Arizona, and I argued with one of his stooges. There is no such thing as medical marijuana. It is the biggest lie of our age. Because the fact of the matter is, if cannabinol has any medical effect whatsoever, then you can take it in a pill form. And I'll tell you something else. If you're inhaling marijuana smoke, you're poisoning your body and you're deteriorating your health. You're not improving it. It's absolute rubbish to say that inhaling anything in a hot smoke is good for you. It's a lie. I've gone down the list 100 times with you. Medical marijuana is no different than marijuana. Is that correct? Sure. It's just that they've come up with a new way to get it legalized, right? So now ask yourself if marijuana is good for you or bad for you. Marijuana is filled with toxins. Marijuana has some toxins in larger amounts than you will find in the equivalent amount in a tobacco cigarette. We've all heard how bad cigarettes are for you. I don't smoke. I don't like cigarettes. They killed my father. They killed my grandfather. I also must tell you that some of the toxic components that you find from burning tobacco, you find when you burn marijuana. And yet if you tell us to the average moron out there, they'll think that you're crazy. Oh, it's all natural. Marijuana is natural. Well, tobacco is natural too. Strychnine is also natural. It's a very natural poison. So just because it's natural doesn't mean that it's not toxic. You know, people don't understand that just because it's natural doesn't mean it's not toxic. I'll give you another example because I have a master's degree in pharmacology. You may not know that. It's medical botany, but we really studied pharmacology, so I know an awful lot about it. If you look at how South American hunters hunt monkeys in trees, what they do is they dip their arrows in a neurotoxin. The neurotoxin is called curare, right? And what it does is when they hit the monkey with the arrow and it's dipped in curare, it relaxes the monkey's muscles. All the muscles no longer function. They can't grip the tree. The monkey falls down out of the tree. And of course, they capture the poor animal and they kill it and eat it. Well, what does it have to do with anything? I'm trying to show you something. That any medicine is also a potential poison. It's only a matter of dosage. That could be even a salt. I can kill you with the salt on your table if the dosage was high enough. I could give you a stroke. So you see what they say, one man's meat is another man's poison. But the fact is, it's all a matter of dosage. And it's dosage which separates a poison from a drug. And so, therefore, you have to understand that marijuana is a toxic poison in almost any dosage. And if there was really any medical benefit from it, and some will say, yeah, relieves this, relieves that, I have an appetite, before I didn't, and all you're wrong. You know and I know that you could take the active component from marijuana, which is Marinol, which the drug Marinol, which contains the cannabinoids, which are allegedly helpful. You don't have to inhale that toxic smoke, which destroys your lungs and destroys the linings of your throat. Period, end of story, don't call me. I know I'm going to get all of the druggies now calling. Every druggie in the country listening is going to start defending their addiction. Same thing all over again. Alex in Florida, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, thank you very much for this. Let me know where to sign. I'd love to sign that class action lawsuit and be there right by your side.
Yeah. Aren't you sick of inhaling this crap that all these drug addicts are using? All these marijuana drug addicts blowing it all over the streets? I hate it.
I can't stand it either. And I got to tell you, unfortunately, when I was a kid, I got duped into smoking this stuff. So I could tell you that it does no good for you at all.
No, it doesn't. It sets a person back. I've admitted on the show I smoked a lot when I was a kid. I've never said I didn't. And it set me back many a year. It makes you too introspective. It makes you think everything you say or do is very, very brilliant. It makes you suspicious of people. Yeah, I know. I know all of the pluses and the minuses about marijuana. Marijuana is, to me, one of the most dangerous of all drugs because it is the gateway drug. Never forget it. And look how Hollywood glorifies the use of marijuana. Every movie, oh, let's just have a joint like it relaxes you. There are a lot of people who become psychotic or semi-psychotic from even two puffs of the new potent marijuanas that are out there, by the way. Tyler, CJ, Tyler, Texas, CJ, you're on the Savage Nation topic, please.
Yes, sir, faith. Faith is all it is, Michael. That's all we have. And I know you're not a religious person. I know how you feel about going into a congregation. And I was an alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. Once you are and once you always will be. And alcoholism is not a disease. It's sin. It's a sin against the temple of God because we all are the temple of God if we'll just accept that. But I tell you what, brother, you hang in there. You have the best talk show in the nation. And I love you, and I know you and the other talk hosts don't get along because you're too radical for them. But I will say this. I have.
Well, there's competition. There's ego. They're all a clique. You know, the Limbaugh, Hannity clique, they all have Fox News to promote each other. But, you know, those days are coming to an end. The bottom line is I really don't care what the other man does or says. All that matters is what I do and say. And, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And I appreciate your kind words. I want to tell you something. This is very interesting. To me, as I say, I'm not a particularly religious man. I am a spiritual person, and I've gone in and out of phases. People who know me know that. There have been years I've been super religious, very religious. I mean, Sabbath and the dinners and the prayer, very heavy duty. And it was my prayer to God to turn my life around. I've told you that story, but I don't want to pull a Glenn Beck on you, okay, and talk about my hemorrhoids, so to speak. That's between me and you. But I told you what happened. I was down on my luck. No matter what I had done, and I just asked God, it was almost 18 years ago, I said to God, or 20 years ago, I said, God, please, I've tried everything. I've gone back to school. I got 2 master's degrees. I got a PhD. I got 2 children. I've tried everything. It is not working. I don't have a job. What should I do? No matter which way I turn, the doors are closed to me, because although I did earn my PhD from a great university, they slammed the door in my face, God, because I'm a white male, and they said white males need not apply. Remember, affirmative action was raging across the land at that time. Little did I know that the social engineers called liberals were doing me the greatest favor on earth. I didn't know that those doors that closed in my face were going to open a bigger door for me, much bigger door, the door of talk radio. Nobody could have told me that this would have happened. Well, I never forget, as long as I live, I went out on my deck. I had a house, a very small house on the hill somewhere in the San Francisco area. And I remember looking up the hill, whatever it was, and I prayed to God. I said, God, please, I'm at the end of my road here. I don't know what to do. I got children. I don't know what to do. I've written my books. I'm tapped out here. And I said, I don't want to have to beg anybody for anything. I said, I'm asking you not for a fortune. All I ask you, God, is to give me a living. I didn't say give me a fortune. Give me a living. Well, the rest is history. I sent tapes out to 450 radio stations. A few of them said, you're really good, blah, blah, blah. It led to one station, which led to what I have now, 16, 17 years later. So what I'm saying is prayer can help. Now, whether it was God's intervention or actualizing what was in me? I don't really know the answer to that. I would have to believe it was a combination of both. I think prayer actualizes, to use a New Age phrase, which is really valid, something within us. So it's going to lead me to something I want to tell many of you who are not really anti-God or anti-religion, but you're not religious and you don't know what to do with it. You see, I know that millions upon millions of Americans want to believe in God but can't believe in God. They don't know how to reach God. They've tried. They've mumbled. They've walked into churches. They don't feel anything. They go into temples and it's the mumbo jumbo in a foreign language. They don't know what to do. They like to believe, but they can't believe. So they don't know what to believe in. But on the other hand, they're not atheists and they don't know which way to turn. And the answer is to try a baby prayer. Try try to crawl before you can walk. And I'm going to show you how to crawl in a few words. I'm not going to hold anything back from you because I learned it myself. And here it is. You don't have to get up there with any complicated ritual to reach God. God understands simple language. And you want to hear one? Try this one every night for 7 nights. Take an aspirin and call me in a week. And here it is. Why don't you say to God every morning and or every evening a simple thing? But you got to really do it quietly, no one around, because you'll get self-conscious and it won't work. First of all, you're going to be self-conscious even if you do it alone. But you really got to lock yourself alone in a bedroom. If you're in a car, no one's watching. Just say to God, God, thank you for another day of life and a day of no pain. Try that. Just say that. Thank you for another day of life and almost no pain. No pain. It means you don't have cancer, let's say. You don't have this or that. That's a gift. It's a miracle. Ask anyone who's ever been sick whether that alone is enough to thank God for. Ask someone who's lost their health what a simple prayer like that means. So if you were to say that in the morning, say, God, thank you for giving me life again today and for another day without pain. Just do that. But really mean it. See what happens after 7 days of doing that. See if your so-called tendencies toward your weaknesses or addictions, whatever they may be, I don't care what they are, see if you don't find yourself slightly moving away from them. Don't expect somebody in a white robe to come down in your living room. And don't expect an MGM affair to occur in your bedroom. It isn't going to happen. It's going to happen within you. Because as others have written, the kingdom of God is within you. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Eddie, my love, I love you so. How I want it for you. You'll never know.
Thank you, God, for another day of life and for no pain except for the dentist. Welcome back to the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. We've been talking about a lot of things. Let's take a caller out of New York on WR. Alfred, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Savage, I have the highest respect for you, and everybody has opinions, but I don't smoke, and I would rather smell marijuana than cigarettes. I don't like none of them, but I would rather...
Well, let me ask you something. Tobacco smoke is virtually banished. It's banished now. No one smokes in restaurants, right?
No smoking in restaurants, yeah.
So how come bums can get away with smoking marijuana, calling it medical marijuana in restaurants, which they do?
Yeah, but I didn't say
How come places that ban tobacco and tobacco smoke do not ban marijuana smoke? Why is that?
I don't know.
Oh, you don't know. Because the marijuana lobby is stronger than the tobacco lobby. Big marijuana, my friend. And for those of you out there who smoke this poison, which smells like feces, by the way, to those of us who are not addicted to it, listen carefully, you fools, you. Ammonia in marijuana smoke is found at levels up to 20-fold greater than that found in tobacco. How about hydrogen cyanide? You want some of that in your lungs and your brain? Hydrogen cyanide has been found in mainstream marijuana smoke at concentrations 3 to 5 times those found in tobacco smoke. So many of you fools think that you're going to live forever because you're high all the time on this garbage. You're going to find out in your 40s that you gave yourself lung cancer or throat cancer from smoking that poison. Don't believe all the crap you hear in your medical marijuana clinic. There are a bunch of drug peddlers, all of them, and they should close every clinic down in this country. If there are any benefits to any of the components of marijuana, get them from the Marinol. Get them from the medication. You don't need the smoke. Period, end of story. It's poison. It's a low-class drug for low-class people, and it is a gateway drug to much harder drugs. Okay, you don't want to hear it, though. You don't want to hear it because you're addicted to it. And I'm going to tell you something else. The more you argue with me, the more addicted you probably are. You don't want to accept it, though. Marijuana is an addictive drug. Now you're going to argue, well, alcohol's no good. I didn't say alcohol's good. I'm not sitting here telling you to become a drunk. Alcohol's very dangerous. So what, now, therefore you should smoke marijuana because alcohol's bad, because your father was a drunk and you're a pothead? That makes you better? End of story. I don't want to talk about it anymore. I've said all I want to say on it. I'm just telling you, I don't want to say any more about it. Ammonia found in mainstream marijuana smoke at levels up to 20-fold greater than that found in evil tobacco. Hydrogen cyanide, highly toxic. Highly toxic. Hydrogen cyanide found in marijuana smoke at concentrations 3 to 5 times those found in tobacco smoke. Mercury, cadmium, lead, chromium, nickel, arsenic are some of the other metals and heavy metals found in marijuana smoke, as are benzene, toluene, styrene, formaldehyde, acetaldehyde, acetone. You want me to go down the list? You don't want to hear it because it's so natural. The joint you smoke is just so natural. It can't be true. This is just some right-wing lunatic, some drunk right-wing lunatic who's against your marijuana, your little drug. Naphthalene, eosinophiline, fluorine, anthracene, pyrene, benzoanthracene, chrysine, benzoafluorethine. You want me to go down a list of names? Doesn't mean anything to you, but your lungs know what these things are. These, your lungs know that you're giving yourself lung cancer, throat cancer, and probably brain cancer from smoking marijuana. No benefits whatsoever from marijuana smoke. However, if you want to take marijuana's components, because they give you an appetite when you've had cancer, as I have heard in some cases, the benefits are there, then take the Marinol, which contains the cannabinoids which you need. The smoke is killing you. End of story. Sid in Florida, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I've listened to you for quite a while. I never agreed with you. Now I find I do agree with you. I'm finding you make more sense. I'm a senior living in South Florida, and I'd to start reading.
First of all, that's an impediment right away. Senior living in South Florida, how could you agree with anything I say?
Move anywhere else. But I was wondering, since you've written so many books, and I can't afford to go buy all of them, what would you, in view of our current situation, which one would you suggest I start with?
Trickle Up Poverty. Trickle Up Poverty is coming out in paperback. It explains exactly what is going on in our society today. The most important chapter is The Nightmare on Wall Street, where I explain which gangsters on Wall Street actually collapsed the economy, why they did it, how they did it, and what Obama has to do with it, and why there's been no repercussions for those who benefited from the collapse of our economy. They're doing it again right as we talk, my friend. This has nothing to do with right, left, center, Republican, Democrat, independent. It has to do with plain old criminality, in my estimation. Trickle Up Poverty. That's even though I should have told you to go by Abuse of Power, but I didn't. Because in terms of the economy, that's what you need to know, okay? Diane, Reno, Nevada, you're the last caller of the hour. Fire away. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. I'm 79 years old, and I've never called a talk show before in my life. But this week you were wondering about your relationship with the listeners. So I got to thinking about that, and even though I'm older than you, I decided that you're the big brother that I never had.
Isn't that beautiful? That is so beautiful. Just remember, big brother is not watching you. Yeah, big brother. I'm big brother. I'm just a man with common sense, something that is sadly missing in our government today. A man with common sense, strong opinions, and I try to back it up with the facts. I hope you've enjoyed what you heard so far. I'll be back in a moment right here on your local affiliate on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The breaking news on MichaelSavage.com. The EPA is now not the leftist machine that it once was. Obama is now following the tune of the GOP, and he actually ordered the EPA to withdraw controversial proposals that would have tightened government smog standards and smothered jobs even further. Government sues biggest U.S. banks over risky mortgages. Job growth comes to a halt. Wall Street tumbles. Illegal workers pocket billions through tax loopholes. Tropical storm Lee forms, threatening flooding in the Gulf. Government is suing a trucking company for firing an alcoholic driver. Wait, let me stop right there. You heard me. The Obama government is suing a trucking company because they fired an alcoholic driver. You say, wait a minute. No, you say, wait a minute. The government says taking the keys away from an alcoholic driver is a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I didn't make this up. This is something that only an egghead administration can do. Come on, that's ridiculous. But identity theft is something you have to take seriously. What if someone stole your credit cards and tried to destroy your life? Don't be a victim. Call my advertiser, LifeLock, today. Call LifeLock now at 1-800-LOCK-485 and get 60 risk-free days just for Savage listeners. 1-800-LOCK-485. Call them now. Citing a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Obama administration is suing a trucking company for taking the keys away from an Arkansas driver and eventually firing him after he admitted he was battling alcohol abuse. But that didn't stop the U.S. EEOC from filing a lawsuit against Old Dominion Freight Lines. They say he discriminated against Charles Grahams. Instead, the EEOC argued they should have let him drive drunk. How do you like that one? Well, that's equal opportunity, isn't it, Beowulf, letting a drunk drive? Well, that's what they're there for, to make sure junkies can administer hypodermic needles to patients in hospitals, drunks can drive, and perverts can teach. Isn't that the object of the Obama EEOC?
Oh, of course.
You know, it's fair as fair. It's insane. It's incomprehensibly insane. Oh, God. Let's see what else made it up to MichaelSavage.com today on this Friday before Labor Day. And Michael Savage, the home of the Savage Nation. Turkey expels Israel's ambassador. That's serious business. Not a good sign. War drums are being beaten. No job gain in August. Find out more about abuse of power. Read the review. Actually, you can read a whole free chapter by going to MichaelSavage.com. I don't know why they're giving it away for nothing, but they are. If you like it, you'll buy it. But this book's amazing. It's coming out in only 2 weeks. Five NASCAR drivers declined White House invitation to meet the president. How do you like that? Fairness doctrine, is it still alive in spirit? We don't know. Anything's possible with Obama. Pentagon fears listening posts from China. Firm with ties to China's military seeks inroads in the United States of America. Really? I wonder who the lobbyist is. Tech firm tied to nation's military. Pentagon reporters found that a multi-billion-dollar Chinese telecommunications company that has been seeking to make major inroads in the U.S. market has close ties to China's military despite the company's denials. Really? I wonder who represented them. We don't know yet. We'll find out who the lobbyist is. We can only guess, right? Probably a former president, vice president, or whatever. I'm looking for the name. I don't see it. In his letter to Mr. Panetta, oh, well, don't worry, you should sleep well at night. Leon Panetta is looking into it. That's the important thing to know. Leon Panetta will let you know whether you can sleep at night. So there it is. What else is in the news? God, I'm afraid to read the rest of the news. I mean, you want to have a fun weekend, right? Shall I read you any more? Here's another one. Justice nominee keeps names of 11 clients secret. Although federal ethics rules require nominees to disclose clients, a new nominee to the Justice Department that Obama picked keeps the names of 11 of his clients secret. All right. That's all. Daryl Issa to the DOJ, we've been gamed. Obama's approval among women at all-time low. Is Obama attacking the guitar company to force them to unionize? FEMA's use of term federal family expands. Radical leftist Berkeley prof with no judicial experience confirmed to California Supreme Court. Perfect. Former New York governor to host radio show David Patterson will lead into Michael Savage on WOR. Arizona says teachers can have accents and use bad grammar. Man suffering from long, painful erections try to rob his father for drug money to kill the pain. Muslim groups upset with 9/11 coloring book. Wonder why. What's the color in the coloring book? Taking heat from Muslim groups with a coloring book about the 9/11 attacks, a publisher says he's been in contact with local police and the FBI. Wayne Bell, a publisher of Really Big Coloring Books, Inc., says there's been a negative backlash against the book We Shall Never Forget 9/11, the kids' book of freedom. These are people from Al Jazeera that have called in here numerous times, people from Iranian TV, people from Palestinian Hamas, Bell said. A lot of people from the Islamic community have called and said increasingly negative things prior to the book being made, and then after we made the book, about the book itself. What don't they like? The book features images of Osama bin Laden and Islamic terrorists. It also shows American citizens upset by the attacks, including a woman with a cross around the neck. But it shows no Muslim Americans mourning the attacks. The Council on American-Islamic Relations, as you well know, a front group, has criticized the book as one-sided, only portraying Muslims as either extremists or terrorists. Bell was asked to explain the absence of patriotic Muslim Americans in the book who are also opposed to the attacks. He said, well, I don't know. I mean, this is what our research showed us. Every time we mention one of the hijackers, we call them what they are. And that's what parents wanted, radical, Islamic, Muslim extremists. And every time we mention one of the hijackers, like the three guys that drove the plane into the Pentagon, there's nothing else you can call them. I mean, what do you think, they're having a bad hair day? Hey, that's a good book to get. That's a good book. Well, there you go. The 9/11 terrorists were radical. They were Islamic. And the fact of the matter is, the terrorists are at fault, not some coloring book publisher. I hope he sells millions of them. You want me to read you a little bit more? I'm not going to. It'll get you sick. All this and more today on the Savage Nation special Labor Day program.
Savage.
Want me to tell you what happened at the museum, a night at the museum? I'm not sure you want to hear about the exhibit, the closed, it had never been open to the public, Birth of Impressionism. So I went, I was invited, because I happen to love Impressionist paintings. Who doesn't? We all grew up on them. I mean, everybody grew up on Impressionist paintings. Everybody who went to college had to study the Impressionists, right? And so many of you say, that's passe, we don't look at it anymore. Who needs it? We know all about it. You don't know all about it. In fact, I went there and found three new paintings that I didn't know existed. I take that back. I did know they existed. One of them I knew existed. The Floor Scrapers from 1875 by Calabot. Unbelievable. Raboteurs de Parquet, to show you I know French. The Magpie by Monet, 1868. And then most important to me, which was the painting that was very political, The Escape of Rochefort by Manet. Now, why did that painting have any relevance for me? The Escape of Rochefort. I'm going to read this to you for 1 minute, and then we'll move on to straight politics. But I want to read this to you. It caught me. It's basically a picture of a sea. And in the midst of this big painting of a sea, there's a small picture of men in a rowboat. And you read it. Edouard Manet, The Escape of Rochefort, 1881. And just listen to the paragraph. It doesn't matter whether you went to college or not. Henri Rochefort founded the controversial political journal La Lanterne, The Lantern, and was actively opposed to the imperial regime of Napoleon III. Sounds like Obama I, doesn't it? This led to his involvement in the Paris Commune, for which he was imprisoned. Press freedom, anyone? Manet depicts Rochefort's daring escape from a French prison colony in New Caledonia. Intended for the Salon of 1881, Manet's political commentary transforms the recent past into modern history. Amen, does it ever. It's interesting to me that they didn't kill political opponents. They didn't send out Secret Service agents or secret agents to spy on them. Well, they arrested them and they, you know, excommunicated them, in this case to New Caledonia, which you have to understand how far away New Caledonia is and how far away New Caledonia was from Paris in the 1880s. If you've been to any part of the South Pacific, you realize it may as well be the end of the world. That he escaped is astounding. But that brings us front and center to today, which is the art of today. Art of today, from the political, it's become the polemical. I'm going to ask you a simple question. You don't have to be educated. You don't have to like art to answer this question, right? Here's the question. Can you name one artist in the United States of America? Name one. You can't. Can you name any artist from France who speaks today for France? Can you name one German artist? No, you don't know of any because there are none. It doesn't mean there aren't people who are painting, there aren't people who are sculpting, there are. But there are no prominent artists in any Western nation. So you say, wait a minute, how did this happen? How did we wind up in a place where there are no artists that we know of? How come we don't know of an artist in America? Can you name one scientist in America? You can't. How come there's not one prominent scientist? In other words, if you look back 50 years, you all heard of Jonas Salk. You heard of a physicist named Albert Einstein. You know what I'm saying? The giants. How come there are no giants in the sciences, the arts today? There's an answer to that as well. In my opinion, I have the answer for that. It has to do with liberalism. Liberalism deconstructed the entire West, all of Western civilization, and destroyed it. And the reason they deconstructed Western civilization is to enable themselves to reconstruct it in the image of a gigantic new Sovietized world where there is no art except art which serves the state. Witness the Obama posters during the campaign, where there is no science other than science which supports the government. Do you follow what I'm saying to you? You have to understand where I'm coming from to understand what I'm saying at all. So I attended an art show at the De Young Museum, classical paintings from the Impressionist era, and I was again taken in by their beauty. But I ask you, where in America today are such works of art being created? Can you name one artist today that creates works of art on the level of a Degas or Renoir? Well, what's amazing is that even the art of that era was sometimes political, as I just showed you. But in the world of art, we've gone from the political to the polemical. Can you think of a single artist today whose art is intended to uplift instead of to offend? Can you think of an artist who describes instead of degrades? Can you think of an artist who reveres instead of reviles America? There's no one. No Western nation currently produces great artists or sculptors, and it's because of the same left-wing ism that has destroyed our political system. The very same left that would laud a loser like Woody Allen, who wishes that there would be a dictatorship where Obama could be a dictator if it wasn't for those nasty Republicans. This is from a Jew. This is from a liberal Jew who wishes for a dictatorship. This is why I've told you years ago that you actually shouldn't fear these people. You should pity them. Liberalism is a mental disorder, a very serious one. What Woody Allen doesn't know is that when the Nazis rose to power in Germany, and that was a dictatorship, I guess that was a bad dictatorship. It certainly was, but to Woody Allen, there was only one bad dictatorship. That was that of Nazi Germany. But I guess the Soviet Union had a good dictatorship under Stalin. Now, what did the Germans do? The Nazis took many of the great works of art, which they considered to be degenerate, and removed them from museums, particularly the art of Jews. They took away the art of Chagall, Kandinsky, and they removed them from public view, but they didn't destroy them. No, did they? Not at all. Ironically, those paintings and many other classical works of art were stolen and hoarded by high-ranking officials of the Nazi regime. Now, what happened in Russia is after the Russian Revolution, the Bolsheviks tried to put all art into the service of the dictatorship of the proletariat. Stalin issued a decree, quote, on the reconstruction of literary and art organizations, and only art in the, quote, socialist realism style was allowed. What does this have to do with America today? Well, listen, the Nazis and the Soviets were both socialist regimes. Never be deceived. We know the Soviets were socialist, that you know, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republic. But you didn't know that the Nazis were socialist until I told you this 4 years ago. And they allowed only art that fell in line with their extreme political agenda. And what did they do? They depicted muscled factory workers in overalls struggling in a steel foundry, or heroic visions of soldiers hearkening back to the Roman Empire. These paintings, posters, and sculptures were propaganda, not real art. And so you go even to China under Mao Zedong. Remember the peasant posters of the noble peasant working in the field? Again, that's an example of state-sponsored art. And what's happening today? That's the real question. Well, what's happening today is that real art has been hollowed out and replaced with garbage that serves the needs of the state. Do you realize that great art is by its very nature conservative? That crap art is by its very nature liberal? A great painting conserves a moment in time or an emotion so that it can be experienced by future generations. The conservative bees build up the hive. The progressive termites tear down the hive. They critique art. They impose meanings upon it that are designed to further their far-left political agendas. And so the art that is created by leftists is destructive. For example, a painting of the Virgin Mary in elephant dung, a crucifix in a jar of urine, or a mindless repetition of images such as Andy Warhol's soup cans. Why was that designed? What is it designed for? Well, all of those pieces of dreck were designed to render the very structure of art meaningless. Remember, the goal of liberal, postmodern, deconstructive art is to tear down the old institutions like the Catholic Church, the family, the nation, and replace them with chaos. And then in that chaos, there is an environment ripe for takeover by a monolithic dictatorial view of culture in which only one opinion on an issue is allowed, and that is the opinion of the government. And in the world of art, this means giant posters of the great leader mounted on every empty wall, as we saw with the Obama posters that appeared in 2008. In the political world, it means a dictatorship, the kind of dictatorship that Woody Allen and other so-called members of the progressive art community wish Obama had. The left has deconstructed art, and now the left is trying to deconstruct our nation as well.
Savage.
You know, I see racism within the Democrat Socialist Party, USA. You know, but no one's talking about it. All I hear are racist comments coming out of the Congressional Black Caucus, such as hate for the Tea Party, fight with them, get in their face. So I'm going to speak with Kevin Jackson. He's a Black Tea Party conservative, and his website is theblacksphere.net. Kevin Jackson, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks a lot for having me, Michael.
Why are liberal socialists like Andre Carson and Maxine Waters given a pass by the lame media for their racist remarks?
Well, what you'll notice is with Andre Carson and the Congressional Black Caucus is they've invested in poverty because it pays. We've spent $17 trillion fighting the so-called war on poverty, and all we've done is raise the idea of what poverty is in America. What you're never going to hear, Michael, is somebody comparing America's poor to the poor in Nepal or to the poor in India. Because America's poor are not poor. They are considered the rich. And unfortunately, nobody wants to talk about that because they can continue the money grab. If we spent $17 trillion up to this point, imagine what we're going to start spending going forward. So you have these guys that unfortunately have nowhere to go. They got everything they wanted in 2008. They got the black president, all the racists that voted for the guy because he was black and not qualified, got what they wanted. They had the full Congress under the control of the Democrats and nobody to blame. So what do? They have to find a scapegoat. Now, 2010, they got their butts kicked. 2012, they know it's coming again. So what do they need to do? They got to do scare tactics. It's that racist Tea Party group. By the way, interesting point. Andre Carson, the guy calling people out for being racist and talking about hanging people from a tree, this guy ran against a Tea Party-supported candidate by the name of Dr. Marvin Scott, a black conservative. That's how racist the Tea Party is.
I mean, I think Carson and Waters and others who made such racist remarks should be apologized. They're never going to be removed from office.
You know, I'm mixed emotions on this. I think that America needs to be made to see just how crazy the left can be by leaving the Congressional Black Caucus in place, because I think they're finally getting a taste of just how far these people are willing to go. They hearken back to the days of slavery. So a Democrat stronghold in order to further their causes, because what do? They keep black people in slavery. So I'm almost in a mode to say, no, leave them in place. Now, if you are going to get rid of Andre Carson and Maxine Waters, you got to get rid of them all. Because as I said before, these guys are the reason that this racism meme is fomented by the left. This tour that these guys are on is nothing more than a black flash mob of the highest order. Gangsters out there trying to scare America into believing that this racist country that, by the way, Michael, is the most diverse country on the planet, is the most racist country on the planet. So we got everything over here, but we're racist.
Are they obviously afraid of the Tea Party, and what are they looking to do here, stir up racial war here?
They are afraid of the Tea Party, and they better be. And think about one of the comments that was made, and I don't remember who made it, but essentially what they did is they said government, going against the Tea Party is against government. So going against government is going against black people because government helps black people. Now, how silly can you be? If you're a black person in America and somebody says to you that you need the help of government, you should slap them. Because the fact of the matter is that you are you're ordained by God as an individual, and government doesn't need to help you. Look, we've got more examples of people who have made it in America, black, white, or other colors, without the need of government than you can shake a stick at. But for the Tea Party to say, hey, look, we want to wrangle in government. We want to actually give power back to the people. We want to actually make government accountable to the people and not the other way around, that's an attack on black people. Now, this is coming from people like Sheila Jackson Lee, who, by the way, gets picked up in a limo to go 200 yards to her destination in D.C. This is the people holding dominion over black people and telling them, you need government. Why do you need government? Because they need government. Government pays their bills. That's why you need government, because they got to have it.
You write about your view of the truth of the Democrat Party. So what, in your opinion, is the truth about the Democratic Party?
They're the most disingenuous, lying group in the history of this nation. They are the reason we have $14 trillion of debt. Now, I'm not exonerating the Republicans by any means. They're complicit because they're trying to keep up. It's a money grab into who can give away the most money the fastest. But the Democrats well outpace the Republicans. And what they've done is they've tricked black people into believing that government is the answer. And they've stolen the imagination. They've stolen the dreams from the black public. And nobody seems to care. Ask a black child what they want to be. They want to be a rapper or they want to be an athlete. Very few of them pick a career. And the nefarious ones, they just want to be drug dealers. This is crazy. We've got people fighting against being rich. When in fact, that's what most people would tell you they want to be. We're dealing with things in numbers instead of concepts. Rich versus poor. No black person in America wants to be poor. But what do? They demonize the rich. So what they're teaching people is how to hate themselves. If you get rich, you shouldn't like yourself anymore. Really? But I want to be rich. How idiotic and how ironic is that, that you can train people to not like what they all want to be?
How important is defeating President Obama next November?
Beating Obama is number one at the highest priority. I would call it at a level of national security, literally. And I don't remember whether DEFCON 1 is the highest or DEFCON 4, but whichever one of those is the highest, we are at DEFCON that level. Because this guy has ruined the country, period. We are more racially polarized. We are back into not only the 1960s, we're back into the 1860s. We have proven that big government is the way these guys want to go. And I can tell you something, Michael. You want to know how bad government is? I know how much water is in your toilet. That's how bad government is. And we can't get these people on the left to understand that government has become the onerous monster living in your house, living with you everywhere you go, when you drive your car, when you go to the grocery store. Government is over there to slap your hand and to tell you they want a piece of whatever it is you get. Enough is enough. We have got to get rid of Obama. We have got to get sanity back into running this country. And I'm going to tell you, it lies with changing the attitudes of the least common denominator, which unfortunately in America right now is the black vote.
Well, in your mind, who was the best candidate to defeat President Obama?
You know, I've got three friends that are running for president, and so I really won't make a pick on that. But what I will tell you is this. I think the Republican primary, I hope it's the ugliest primary ever. I hope that we beat each other to death, because the last man standing should earn the support of whomever. I don't care if it's libertarian, whatever. We need to rally behind whoever makes it, and I don't care what candidate that is, because the singular focus that we have to have is to get rid of this absolute atrocious government that we currently have, or administration that we currently have. This is the war on achievement, the era of brown underwear, and it's time that it ends, and it's all because of this idea of racism. Everybody on the left wanted to feel good in their souls about electing the black guy, with nobody taking into account his credentials, his capabilities, anything. This guy could not work in corporate America. He couldn't be a CEO for a small company, much less one of the Fortune 1000.
Kevin Jackson, thanks for being with us on the Savage Nation.
Michael, it was great talking to you. And if I may, I'd like people to support the Black Sphere Foundation, which is my nonprofit. People need warriors, and I think that my group has proven that we are out there fighting the good fight. And also my book, The Big Black Lie. I think it's one of the best political books ever written, and because it has a lot of messages in it. So thanks again.
This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Give people all of the information and advice in the world about healthy eating and exercise. But if parents can't buy the food they need to prepare those meals, if their only options for groceries are in the corner gas station or the local mini mart, then all of that is just talk. It's all just talk, and that is not what Let's Move is about.
Did you hear that? And it's organizations like the AARP who control these leftist politicians. AMAC is fighting back. The Association of Mature American Citizens. Your membership can help stop the left wing. Call 800-255-4199, 800-255-4199, or go to AmericaIsRising.com, 800-255-4199, AmericaIsRising.com. Let's go to the callers. Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation from KNEW. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I'll tell you, the moderate exercise, and you're absolutely right. About a year ago, well, a year and a half ago, I was doing heavy squats, okay, with my trainer. She noticed that my right eyelid was drooping, and I had ptosis and meiosis in my right eye. The right eyelid was drooping. My pupil was small. I called my doctor. He said, look, that's a serious condition. You got to get to the hospital right now.
Right.
And I'll tell you what. I got to the emergency room. Later, they gave me an MRI, and I had a carotid dissection. I mean, that, you know, I've all saw the move. When you're really pressing hard on doing heavy squats or any heavy movement, I was 40 at the time. And,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it blew out the inside of my right carotid arm.
Well, right, because your body can – look, it's common sense that when you strain your body – let's use old, simple terminology, not medical jargon, not big words. When you strain your body, you're putting pressure on internal organs. I mean, in common parlance, right? And some of those internal organs would include the vascular system. And so when you put extra pressure, internal pressure on your arterial system, your venous system, your, in other words, your vascular system, you're liable to break something, right, Dan?
Absolutely, and I did. I tore the inner lining in my right internal carotid artery. Right?
So how did immediate surgery saved you?
Well, I didn't need surgery. I needed to go on blood thinners for 9 months. I mean, and that stuff is just awful. I had to give myself a shot every day, and then I had to go on warfarin.
What were you on, Coumarin?
It's called Coumadin.
Yeah, it's Coumadin. I know how it was. People don't even realize how that was developed. You know that? I remember when I was studying pharmacology as a graduate student. I think it was a student in graduate school designed a rat poison that if you put it into the food, the bait, the rat would eat the food, and the poison that he developed was the progenitor, the grandfather of the Coumadin. It caused bleeding. The rat would bleed to death. Did you know that?
It's rat poison. Exactly, I did. And
very few people understand that medicines and poisons are only a matter of dosage. You know that.
That's exactly it. It's an old drug, and you're taking a controlled dose of rat poison.
Well, so today you've given up. The point of your story is a little different, though. It's about weightlifting and how it almost killed you. So obviously you've modified your exercise regimen.
Yeah. I don't push myself. I do more cardio. I do push-ups, things with my own body weight. I do weights, but, more reps. Less
Dan, when you do push-ups, here's another one. When you do push-ups, how many do you do? Do you do till you're gagging?
No. No, I'll do maybe 25 or 30, sometimes 50, but I don't do it till I'm, why do
right.
that?
So, that's exactly right. What I'm getting at. Think of Tai Chi when you do any exercise. Think of gentle motion. Think of slow motion, easy on your body. The body's not made for it after a certain age. You're not a kid anymore.
Exactly. And even kids.
Well, Dan, you read increasingly of young kids getting heart attacks today playing ball. It happens even to youngsters today because of the garbage food that they're eating. Their arteries are clogged.
Exactly.
Do you know that famous study of autopsies that were done on soldiers in the Korean War, then the Vietnam War, and what they found?
No.
Oh, well, hold on. I'm going to tell it to you on the air. And I think maybe if I'm not, well, I can't with any certainty say it was going back to World War II because I would be making it up. But I know for sure that there was a comparison done between the deceased soldiers, the autopsies, for example, of soldiers who had died in the Korean War and then of soldiers who they autopsied during the Vietnam War. And there was a degeneration of the arterial system, the cardiovascular system, that was dramatic as a result of dietary alterations in the American diet, rather. In other words, if you went back and you did an autopsy of guys who died in World War II, you would have found a much different picture internally that is in their arteries than you would have found, let's say, by 1952. And then you speed it up to 1969, it's a whole different story. Because the junk food diet had already become prevalent in America by the time these boys, God bless their souls, the guys who died in Vietnam, who had, they already grew up. You're talking about guys who were born in 1950, et cetera, maybe 1950. So by then they were they're already eating junk food in the 50s. Back in the 40s, there was very little junk food. The diet was totally different back in the 1940s. And, of course, you go back and back and back. It's the same thing. You find more whole foods, less fat, less sugar in the diet. Right now we have a sugar epidemic in America. And you say, well, what does that have to do with arterial damage? Well, you read the work of the recently deceased great doctor. He just died. And he was one of my heroes. But I don't think I want to put his name out and have a rush on it. The guys but he wrote about the sugar disease a long time ago. He said a good many of the degenerative diseases of our time are based on too high a quantity of refined sugars in the diet. He wasn't even laying the blame on the doorstep of the fats, by the way, which is a whole other controversial area. We are fat-obsessed in the United States of America to the detriment of the health of many women and children. You see families today raising children on pure vegetarian or vegan diets, and the children are suffering. They're tired. They can't focus. They're not bright. They're getting vitamin deficiency diseases, and the mothers will not give them a hamburger. Oh, no, my child's never eaten red meat. Great. Great, but take a look at your child's health. My child's never had a piece of chicken. Well, I had this experiment when my children were little, and I told you about it. There were many people back in the day who were raising their children vegetarian. I wasn't, because I knew children needed a diet rich in protein, a certain amount of fat, etc. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I was totally into health at that time. Ground up apricots, vegetables. So don't think I was just feeding junk food. But mixed in with every meal was a high degree of good quality protein. If I made hamburgers, I ground onions into them. So the long and short of it is if friends' kids would come over to dinner, and my kids were eating chicken, and the parent with the vegetarian child would turn her head, that kid would grab the chicken off my kid's plate. The child was starving. Now go to the women today, the young women. The skinny young women with perfect figures, so-called. The ones who look like post-op transvestites, which is the new model, let's say, for the American woman. It used to be a full-hip woman. A woman with a certain voluptuousness was considered the social norm. Today, because of various influences, which I don't have to spell out, a woman tries to look like a man who's had a surgery. These women are near insane, many of them, from a lack of nutrients such as iron. They're suffering iron deficiency. They're suffering deficiency of the B vitamins. They're suffering folic acid deficiencies because they have known nothing about food and diet. Nothing. They're not being taught anything about it. Many of them have anxiety attacks. They put them on pills. And the reason they'll take the pills is because it doesn't add any weight. It's not what they need. They need to go on a balanced diet, which means real food. So anyway, and by the way, you can be a vegetarian, don't get me wrong, if you know how to balance your foods. Please don't misinterpret what I'm saying. I wrote books on this going back 30 years ago, so I understand that. You can. It's very difficult, though. And then you have to supplement your diet with certain B vitamins, which you're not going to get from the vegetables. But people don't do that. They don't know it. But women are a special case. I mean, women are different than men with regard to things that occur in their body on a regular monthly basis. And during that phase of their month, they're losing a certain amount of iron, for example. They are deficient in iron, and it causes an energy loss. Women don't understand this. And they have to understand it. So anyway, look, this is well established in good old health books that were written, I would say, more than 10 years ago. You can't find a lot of this information anymore. And yes, I'm going to pitch you now. Buy Healing Children Naturally. Why? Because it actually has great diets for prospective parents who can't have children. There's a diet for pregnancy. There's diets for the father even prior to conception. You say, wow, that's quackery. All right, then go take drugs.